Hi, this is Dave Dufour with a quick note about an upcoming event. John, Marcia, and I have scheduled the live Theater Geeks Brunchcast for Saturday morning, January 14th, 2012, and this time we're sticking to it. We'll be on stage at the Bristol Opera House in Bristol, Indiana, taping a few episodes of the show and generally having a lot of fun. This is a fundraiser for Elkhart Civic Theater, but anyone is welcome. It would be really great to meet some of our listeners from across the country. More details are on the way, so keep listening to the podcast and keep checking the website at theatergeeks.com. In the meantime, mark your calendar and plan to be there January 14th, 2012.
This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Let's do it. Okay.
Don't be pretentious.
I don't
David.
Want to be pretentious. Okay.
Well, did you know that?
Yeah. Pardon me.
We could do pardon me.
We could do a whole show.
What was the old
British
Warner Brothers?
Now you're recording this. Quit it.
I've been recording for 5 minutes here.
Well, don't. I don't like that because I never know what he's going to put on there.
All right. Well,
somebody. Well, we could talk about somebody and never know it.
Yeah, really.
Okay. Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. Today we are talking about music in the theater and sound effects.
And sound effects.
And sound effects. And little known fact, Aristotle, who is our favorite philosopher, right?
Who else?
Well, Aristotle? He had this list of things that are like the major elements of theater, of what makes up theater, and one of them is music, which also includes sound effects in his definition. So they kind of go together. But we use a lot of music both as part in our productions at our home theater as part of entre act. Now, we're not talking about necessarily musicals, but use music between acts and use music as accentuation, and you have to be kind of deft with that, don't you? I mean, be careful about how you do that. And sometimes a play will call for it, and sometimes it doesn't, and you can use it anyway, but don't get crazy.
Yeah, well, I know that some scripts call for very specific songs, and mm-hmm. when it calls for a song that's still under royalty, you know, of course, then you actually have to pay for it.
Right.
In fact, that's often contracted if there's a song that has to be played in a show,
mm-hmm.
then not only in your contract are you paying for the royalties for the show, but you're also paying a nightly royalty to perform the song.
Right.
But, that's really kind of a rare thing, but the use of music in a show can really heighten the tension on stage or, you know, can relieve tension on stage when a song comes on sometimes.
Right.
But, yeah, you're right. It needs to be deftly done, and you need to have somebody who really kind of thinks about that. And
right.
when they do it.
But now what you'll see a lot of times in a show where someone will, you know, for example, turns on the radio, and then there's some music playing out of the radio, but it can't play for a whole scene, and you tend to fade it out. I mean, do audiences kind of notice that, oh, wait a minute, nobody turned the radio off, but it's not playing anymore? Or, I mean, how do you, you know, there's weird things like that sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good question. I usually let it go. I mean, I think
your
brain kind of lets it go. It establishes the music, and then it just, you know, then it
ignores
starts
it.
And if you bring it down slowly, as long as you don't, like, mm-hmm. just cut it right off, but, you know, taper the music down over a gradual period of time, it's, I don't think the audience misses it.
See, I don't know if you're talking about music as an integral part of a show and not a musical, and that you insert it under specific dialogue, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. Or, I mean, I don't know how you would do that anymore.
Well,
a lot of shows today, a lot of plays have music written specifically for them.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, and actually, right. a lot of those shows that have those soundtracks uh-huh. written for them, they're making that music now available.
Yeah.
So you mm-hmm. can actually purchase the
That's
music
good.
And have the original soundtrack with those shows if the director felt strongly enough about that music being a part of the show.
Yeah.
Right.
And so, which is, it is kind of cool. Again, it's like paying the royalty for a song that is played during a specific song, like, I don't know, like an Elvis Presley song or something like that,
right.
that still has a royalty associated with it. But there are musicians out there specifically writing soundtracks for shows, and those soundtracks are now available. And because, like I said, the directors and the musician feel strongly enough about that being a part of the whole that they're making it available.
Right. It's really kind of movie-esque in essence, though, the more that's done, yeah, isn't it?
It is.
Of course.
Yeah.
And you know, the funny thing is, I mean, obviously I'm a big fan of Turner Classic because a lot of those are from when I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Or not growing up, just getting older. And sometimes if you look at the movie on the TV and you turn the sound off, so there's no music,
mm-hmm,
it's like, whoa, all of a sudden it flattens out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if it does the same thing. I've never used it in a show underneath a dramatic moment or something like that. And I'm just wondering, if you did that, would it be more intrusive than...
I don't know. I think it needs to be done well, you know.
Yeah.
And, right. I'm trying to think the last time we did that, I think, was during the Diary of Anne Frank, when we really had somebody sit and think about music and what music to play to kind of heighten an emotional moment in the show, or two or three. And it works really, really well. And they were not songs written specifically for the show, but it was somebody who had a very good knowledge of music.
Really careful.
And I mean, I think that person did their research. They found a Jewish composer that was killed during the Holocaust, but had some of their works recorded prior.
There was a historical relationship there.
Yeah,
as
and
well.
it really I thought worked well with the show.
Now we've done a production of Dracula, which we do I think we've used the same music pretty much for the last three times we've done it, and it's mostly it's Wagner and Richard Strauss and I think a little Beethoven, something else in there. But anyway, the point is that that script doesn't call for that much music. But I would hesitate. You know, we look at it now. How would you? If I saw that show without the music, it would bother me. And I don't know if that's just because I've seen it so many times with the music, or if it's that it really needs it.
Well, you're saying the music, but
music that the soundtrack we more or less developed our theater, but the three times we produced that show, it's been the same music. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just think it's an element, and you know, possibly that show would work just as well without the music,
or with other music,
or with different music.
There's
but
a lot of music.
But that particular music or that particular show lends itself towards having maybe a soundtrack. Not every show necessarily does.
Actually, I think that particular production called for theremin music. If anyone knows how to play the theremin,
that's Third Man.
Theremin is that. That's zither. Oh, that's zither.
Spellbound.
Theremin is the electronic thing that goes.
Spellbound is the theremin. Are you hearing me, David?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
That's the sound of it.
Well, so obviously, though, when they did that show on Broadway, because that show was on Broadway, they must have had a live musician playing the theremin.
Yeah.
That's what it's
called.
Yeah,
you have to wave your hands around.
Yeah, it's almost like an electric saw or something.
It's got like a loop and a bar. There's
whatever. It's like, you know, in the movies now, you can tell. Because I watch and I notice Mick Steiner and Miklos Rosa and Alex Korngold. If you see those names on the screen as having done the musical score, you know it's going to really hype up the music, the movie. And now it's John Williams. Mm-hmm. Just amazing stuff.
Right. Yeah.
But I don't know if you could do that with a play. Do you know what I mean? To where if you played a theme from it, oh my gosh, everybody would know that that's the play you're talking about.
No, because he doesn't get the same sort of distribution, and people can't play it again. They can't buy the album necessarily. Yeah. I mean, this sort of thing. So, you know, that makes
it
difference.
But then, you know, let's look past music, though, and let's talk about sound effects, though, because it's kind of the same thing. And sometimes, you know, the right sound effect or the right series of sound effects can really make the show something special.
Right.
It's not necessarily just, we're talking about like a dog barking here or, you know, but you know, the show opens to, you know, it may not conceptualize in the script that the show opens to street noise, But if you have a good sound designer,
right,
who can sit and look at a script, and maybe, and again, it's always in connection with the director, and hopefully the director might be able to see that as well, but that a sound designer can start to really heighten the way you, an audience feels about a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the lights come up and we hear the street noise in the background. It's not written in the script, but we hear the street noise in the background, and that street noise kind of tells us that we're in downtown New York, or
right.
We hear the clip clop of carriages and we know that we're back in time somewhere. You hear birds chirping and
you know you're in the country.
Crickets, and suddenly you know you're in the country. So that those sound effects, just like a piece of music, can really set a mood or a location for a show.
But it's really critical that you have somebody who kind of understands audio, or can, because we don't do that many sound effects live anymore. I think what we have, a door slammer and an onstage doorbell, but most of our other sound effects come from tape originally, and now from CDs.
Digital. Yeah, we're actually on SD card now.
We're on digital now.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Oh, that has changed since the last show I directed then. But that's very, it works real well. But if you have to create any sound effects, there's still a skill involved there, because you may not be able to find, you know, the sound of a left-handed wrench unscrewing, unscrewing an iron hinge. You know, how do you find that? You know, you have to make that.
I don't get a chance to use music very much, like as an underscore, but I do like to select music for scene changes. You know, so if you're moving from one scene to another and you can kind of hype or continue the feeling of that scene that just concluded into the next scene, sometimes with a really good music choice. Of course, sometimes people don't necessarily choose the right song. That can take you out of the moment.
Sat through some where the scene change music comes on and you go, what is that? And why are they playing it?
Mm-hmm.
It has nothing to do. Mm-hmm. Must be something that somebody up in the sound booth really likes, because it's just way off the wall with whatever's going on stage.
Mm-hmm. Or they just think
so
that,
I agree with you. It's great if it carries through it makes a transition from one era to another or something. But when it's just there to fill time and audio space, forget it.
Right.
It's better to have nothing.
Sometimes it's better to have nothing anyway, isn't
it?
I mean, don't you have some shows where you really want the mood to be, let the audience be in their thoughts? We don't want the blackout, and you want the audience to sit there and now think about that for a second, reaction. And so, absence of sound is, you don't have to have wall-to-wall noise.
No.
And
that's correct.
And you got to give your actors something to do, for starters, right?
Right, because if the music is acting for them, then they don't have to do the work.
Right, right. What about resources for sound effects? Are they pretty hard to find now, or
normally if it's in a script, you can get it.
From the licensing company.
I have to say though, I have a favorite musical that. At the very end, it's a murder mystery musical.
Yes.
And you go through the whole show, and there are a couple of gunshots in the show. And at the very end, you wait. It's like 3 minutes. And then all of a sudden, you think that's done. And all of a sudden, this new track comes in. And it's the director and the sound effects guy trying to find the right gunshot.
Oh, geez.
Because they couldn't find the right gunshot. So they're trying and trying, and you get a skeet gun, and you get all these.
Oh, geez.
Some sort of grenade launcher. I mean, they just go through all these different sound effects. And it ends with, maybe we should just stab him.
That's funny.
Well, jokes with sound effects are a lot of fun too. I mean, I think there is an art to making like live sound effects as well. We were talking about some of the radio sound effects that people used to do, and you think, well, can you still do those?
Well, they used to do them in dramatic or mystery radio shows, like help me out here. I can't remember.
Inner Sanctum.
Inner Sanctum. The Inner Sanctum, the when the squeaking door opens.
Yes.
That's a nail going across a piece of glass.
That's right.
Just in case you ever really frightened. That's cool.
Win a trivia
was.
Contest. Well, Spike Jones used a lot of...
Spike Jones. And in the show that we're doing now, they have a radio sound effects guy. And you'll be kind of surprised to see what things are used to make specific... sounds that you will recognize, but certainly not as emanating from their source.
Right. Yeah. Know? Sure. So. And I mean, and that it is fun to watch that. You know.
Yeah. You've seen it that is.
If you've,
it
you know.
Is.
But I will say that a couple of years ago, we did a show. We did the Adventures of Tom Sawyer.
Uh-huh.
And at the last minute, realized that we were supposed to have a dog barking.
Yes.
And nobody had the time to get a CD created. And so
we just off stage and barked?
I put a microphone up in the booth and at the right time, I leaned into the microphone and went, or whatever.
Very
and
good.
You know, and so there are still live sound effects being used in regular performances too.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, door slams. A lot of times, instead of if you want that sound of like a door slamming or a door opening and closing in the wing, so it feels like they've just come into the house.
Yeah.
It's just as easy to put the little.
Well, and that's the sort of sound effect, especially that you kind of like, you sort of feel instead of it's a little bit more visceral than you can tell if it's a recording. I mean,
yes.
There are times when recordings just doesn't get it.
Nope.
You know, it is doesn't give you the realism.
I also still think a thunder sheet sounds better than any live thunder recording that you can get.
Really?
Take a piece of
and it lets the stagehand get all their inhibitions
out. Yeah, it does. But I really do sometimes. I think if you want a real good thunder effect, you might as well just go back to the old-fashioned thunder sheet.
And what about the crash box? The crash box is one of my favorite things.
We still use crash box.
Yes.
Right. You know, unless you want like a really funny-sounding crash. But if you want just a normal-sounding crash, we've got two different crash boxes.
Explain crash boxes.
Well,
what do we
have? We have one that's a metal drum. Well, it's actually an old trash can that's just been taped up, and it has silverware in it.
Uh-huh.
So if you want that sound of like a big crash of everything falling, and then we have a cardboard box that's got all kinds of broken china in it. So if you want the sound of broken plates, then you just, you know, this box is all taped up so that it won't leak china all over the stage when you use it, and you just turn it one turn, and it sounds like a whole tray of cups or glasses have been dropped on the floor, or you can physically drop it on the floor. Our crash box that's made out of a trash can is so beat up that it won't even stand up anymore on its own, because there are times when I think one time we threw it down a staircase so that you would get the sound of something crashing down a flight of stairs.
Yeah. Oh, geez.
So we actually let it tumble down a flight of stairs every night. So
now,
the
what is the one that we're using now? What do you call that?
That's a glass crash box. It's a little bit different. It's
so that it sounds like a window is breaking.
Being broken.
Yeah.
Right. So it's got an actual pane of glass in it, and you
and a lid
crash
with
it, and it's got a nail
on
it,
and you
crash
just
it, and
do
it
that.
So you have to break a new one every night.
But it's just a little square glass.
Gotcha. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But those sound effects are still good. And effective backstage, especially if you have a problem with timing. Sometimes you want to do a live sound effect.
Yeah, timing is still a little tricky. I mean, I used to do it with cassettes and try to exactly right.
Yeah, unless you rely on the person that's doing the sound effect call up in the booth and rely on them to do it on their own. If you're trying to call a sound effect as a stage manager, there's always a delay.
There's a delay.
If
you
just
do it
live from the stage, you don't have that delay. It's ready to go.
Yeah, I mean, the only way the booth should do it is if it's a visual cue from the stage anyway,
exactly.
And they can be right with it.
There.
Mm-hmm. You know, but do you mic the sound effects usually, like the crash box?
Depends. And if it's supposed to be coming from another part of the house, sometimes you just don't mic it. Or if you want it to be louder or something, then of course you're going to mic it.
But yeah.
For the most part, because it's supposed to sound like it's coming from a different location.
Yeah.
Crash boxes are always just sort of, they always make me laugh because it's like, because I've always used it for humorous gag kinds of things. Somebody like, you know, falls off stage and then you hear this thing, or, you know, it's just kind of a fun, it's a fun thing.
I think that's when our one crash box got all eaten up is because we had a wheelchair during the Real Inspector Howe.
Oh, Real Inspector Howe.
Where the wheelchair
came
down. It's supposed to be coming down a flight of stairs. And I think we physically took something, that crash box, and had it actually come down a flight of stairs, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't remember. And then you see the wheelchair roll out and come down the last
We did it's we did crazy. A thing where it was a melodrama where we had this, we had the little girl on stage singing off key, and then the hook comes out, you know, to try to pull her off stage. It was like an Olio act during a melodrama, and so the little girl is, you know, she gets a hold of the hook and she pulls on it and yanks on it and yanks on it and yanks on it and finally lets go, so that obviously the person at the other end falls down, and so the hook goes back and then the crash box went and all that. So it usually got a very big laugh from the audience, but anyway, that was that's, and we'd kick the darn thing, just kick it, make it roll, and
whatever somewhere. You can do to make that sound
they're
effect.
Fun they're fun. But sound, the thing about sound effects is that you can overdo it, and you can with music. So it really it comes down to a director either being the one making those decisions as to what gets used and what doesn't, and at what level.
And it's another important reason why, then, if you're going to use music as an underscore, or if you're going to have a lot of sound effects in a show, you really need to incorporate them fairly early in the rehearsal process, but in the last couple of weeks of rehearsal, you want to be, it's just like a musical. You want to start rehearsing to that underscore. And that's what we've done. It's always been on CD. And even if it's just run from the front row, that music is then run on a boom box or whatever to get the cast used to feeling where that song is going to start, how long they have until the song is over. Because sometimes it has to be timed just like a musical would be timed.
And
so it's important to incorporate the music and the sound effects if they're going to be very
I had that happen with a show where people were, you know, changing a radio station, and it was really up to the person in the booth to kind of follow, because he had like two tracks going and was able to alternate between two different tracks, and it was mimed changing the radio station on a car radio, and it really was last minute before the cast really got to work with it, and it was actually rather upsetting to a couple of those people, like, you know, because they couldn't rehearse to it. They were worried about not being able to do it right. What if I move my hand at the wrong time? And the thing was, is it wasn't really going to be a problem for them, but they didn't know that until they actually worked with it. And I think it's really important. Yeah, you're right.
And if
those things earlier than opening week.
Yeah. If you're having like gunshots or something, it's important to get them in early.
Right.
We have one in this show, and we were using a starter pistol, and it just went click every night. We decided, well, we better put a cap in there or something. And the first time he did it, everybody on the stage just jumped a foot, because they were not ready for the
well. The starter
gunfire.
Pistols are loud enough. We have the other gun. We have a couple of different.
I have a starter pistol that uses blanks that are scary. I mean, they're huge, and
that's not the one we're using, is it?
No, we just don't use it anymore because it is so loud that I remember the last time I used it.
Well, it deafens the user. It deafens the user.
I couldn't hear for about 5 minutes.
Wow.
Right. Yeah. That's the gun I'm thinking of. Yep. We were just testing it out, and whichever hand I had it in, that ear was dead for about half hour.
Just use that as a dummy gun now. We because it's just too loud. And even a half blank in it
half
is too
load.
Loud.
Half a load is better than none.
Oh, geez, I wish I'd say
as
that.
We say that anyway. Yeah, it's louder than none anyway.
So I think people, you know, if we're going to come down to anything, people should incorporate music more.
Yeah,
as you said, Aristotle believed in it.
That's right.
Yep. And it definitely sets a mood.
It can set a mood, but you just have to be really careful with it.
Yeah,
don't overuse music, and try not to overuse sound effects, because you can tell, like, you go from one, like, here's a robin chirping, then there's a cardinal chirping, and then and it's just that somebody didn't have enough chirps, you know, and so they just started throwing chirps together, and it's
you can tell
silly.
One chirp from another.
Well, you can.
That's right.
Oh, wow. I'm impressed.
All right, folks. Well, that wraps up this episode of Theater Geeks.
We've made enough sound.
I'm going to put some music underneath.
Oh,
well, we'll have our closing music under this. That's true.
Oh, God.
So be sure you stop by our website and listen to listen to the podcast at www.theatergeeks.com. Stop by the online store and check that out. You can buy all kinds of stuff there, like
And it all says Theater Geeks.
And it all says Theater Geeks on it. And then also be sure to subscribe to the podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe at the Zune Marketplace. You can go to the Blueberry Network if you don't have either one of those kind of podcatchers, and you can subscribe there. We are also available on Roku. If you happen to have a Roku box on top of your set, go to the Blueberry Network and check out the audio selections. We're in there. So check all that stuff out, and join us next time on our next episode of Theater Geeks. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shoup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.